What's up, guys? Welcome to the first ever episode 196 of the Kind of Funny Games Cast. As always, I'm Tim Geddes, joined by one of the coolest dudes in video games, Greg Miller.
Bonjour!
And once again, the Reverend, Jared Petty.
Now with taurine.
Damn. Yeah, a lot of it.
Yeah, I gotta have the taurine right now.
What's taurine? I don't know what taurine is.
It's the mysterious name for like whatever they
the
get
non-sugar sugar for sugar-free Red Bull.
The bull testicles that they put in this or whatever.
Is that why they call it Red Bull?
Huh?
Is that what they call it, Red Bull?
Because they call because the taurine.
Cause
it has taurine, I think so.
Like Tauros.
That's my guess. Yeah. Yeah.
Pokemon. Yeah. It's cold in here.
Yeah.
Or there Tauros. Must be some Tauros in the atmosphere. I said, burn!
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Kind of Funny Games Cast. Each and every week, right here on YouTube.com/Kind of Funny Games, we get together, talk about video games, all the ones that we've been playing, all the things that we love about them. Today's a very special episode. We're gonna do a little bit of that, but then we're also gonna get into our Game Awards predictions for 2018.
Jeff.
Jeff Keighley,
I didn't come. He didn't come to the show today.
Not today.
Too bad.
Shout out to Patreon producers Matthew Fellier and Travis Barrett and all of you beautiful people whose names are right here. You have been a nice Patreon supporter for the month of October, so thank you for that. We had an amazing pre-show. So a lot of people got to see that. And if you're watching this at the $10 or above level on patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, you get to watch our riveting discussion.
35 minutes about PlayStation pulling out of E3.
Yeah, which was breaking news the morning of the day that we're recording this. So yeah, it's good stuff. What do you got? You look like you have something.
What you got?
I was looking through the Game Awards categories. I'm getting ready. I'm getting briefed. I'm getting ready. I'm getting rock hard to get in there.
Oh my.
And rub the soap on the stomach. Woo! That is the Game Awards 2018, Andy! Woo!
Yeah, we got Andy on the shock mic.
Yeah.
He's going to talk about a little bit of Red Dead Redemption 2.
Number one game journalist.
Number one game journalist.
It is, man. I can sleep right now. Let me tell you guys.
That is in fact true.
It's a smoke. I'm telling you, you can't breathe. It makes you sleepy.
It's bad. It's bad.
What's Greg, happening?
Yeah,
let's get right.
What are we getting into, Doggy Dog?
Fallout 76,
the divisive online RPG from one Bethesda Studios.
Greg Miller, I love Fallout. I'm trying to decide whether I want to play this game or not because it's so very different. I can't cheat.
Sure.
It's an multiplayer online experience.
Right.
Cheats are a big deal for me.
I know. You told me about this last time we played or talked about Fallout. Yeah.
So what I want to know is this the one? Is it good? Is it legit?
Here's what I'll tell you, Jared, and I'll set the stage for everybody out there. Everybody knows I like Fallout. Since Fallout 3, right? Fallout 3, I think, is the one most people jumped on. I love Fallout 3. Played it backwards and forwards. Fallout New Vegas didn't connect as well for me for some reason at the time. I don't remember. Played it, though, for a little bit. And then Fallout 4 platinumed. Big Fallout 4 fan. When E3 was on the horizon and Bethesda started teasing they're going to do a Fallout game, right? Or a Fallout announcement there. And it was like, oh, what is Fallout 76? Oh, my God. I was like, yeah, all right, cool. I'm interested. I'm excited. I kind of had a bad taste in my mouth from Fallout 4. Which I enjoyed and platinumed, obviously, right? But I remember being disappointed in the story they were building. I thought Fallout 3 story was so good. Even though I didn't get super far in New Vegas, it was good. You know what I mean? Fallout 4 was more of like, oh, we always go back to that games cast, right, Tim? Where you were sitting there with me and Colin. You're like, you guys are excited for this. What's your fear? And I was like, my fear is they just do, it's just a better looking Fallout 3, right? Mm-hmm. They don't really push it anywhere. And that's what I thought Fallout 4 was. They really didn't push it.
Sidebar, play Far Harbor. That's the best Fallout 4 story.
Was that PS3?
No.
Fallout 3 or Fallout 4?
Fallout 4 DLC.
Yeah. See, the problem with that one is I started that one and it was, I remember being excited to get back to it and jumped in there and I jumped in before they put out their whatever patch. So it was like, running through the fog and I was like, you know what? I can't.
Still good. The robot murder mystery on the little island. You should really play that. You enjoy it.
You're going to enjoy where I'm taking you.
Okay.
I'm taking you on a walk, but we're going to get somewhere. You're going to have some fun. So, all right, cool. And then, of course, Jason Trier, number two games journalist. No offense, Andy. You know what I mean? You're number one. He's number two. You know I don't want to. I don't offend the god over here.
I feel that any other day, like you know, it could. We could
you trade the title back and forth?
Yeah.
Okay. Then on this day,
any given day,
on this day of that, the news, Jason Trier, number one games journalist, breaks the news. Right, I'm a Fallout 76 multiplayer game. You're all in the online world. Everybody loses their fucking shit. Game gets revealed. Todd Howard comes out at E3 during Bethesda, tells me all about it. Mm-hmm. Waits till the end, gives this long presentation trying to explain Fallout 76. I watch it. All these vault dwellers are running around. They all got their names on the side of the screen. They're all shooting a thing. And I'm like, man, that's not how I play Fallout. I don't run and gun in Fallout. I don't shoot things like this guy. You know, the vats aren't vats. It's not freezing time. I'm like, I don't know what this. You know what I mean? And as time goes on, Yeah, I don't know about this. I see more and more from it. I'm just like, I want to be excited. It's Fallout. I don't know. Best Buy hires me to do that Twitter party where it's like, come ask questions about Fallout and talk to Fallout fans. I'm like, yeah, sure, of course. So I asked a whole bunch of questions about Fallout. And the what I thought was interesting when I got hired for that from Best Buy, I thought they were hiring me to go ask Bethesda questions. In reality, we were just having a conversation with the fans of Fallout.
Ah.
And so many of them had already played so much of the beta. Like, you know, I think the alpha even, not even the beta. And, they were talking to me like, oh, no, it's like this and this. And I was like, oh, that actually sounds kind of cool. Okay. All right. You're piquing my interest.
Mm-hmm.
A couple weeks ago, we get the beta finally on PS4. I want the ability to save my or bring my character over, which, of course, turned out to be a giant waste of my time because, hey, I only got 2 hours to play. Fuck it. Random generate the character. I don't care. Let's run through the world. Ah, run through like a crazy person. I'm not even listening. And we did the games cast and I was like, I don't know. I don't know what I felt. I want to play more, but I can't say if I'm enjoying it or not or anything like that. Last night, come home, sit there, spend all the time I want building a Greg Miller character, which I don't do in a Fallout RPG.
Shocking.
I know, right? It's usually Taylor Swift, but I was like, if it's me playing with other people online, I'd like it to kind of look like me.
American as fuck.
Put out the photo. Yeah, then I find the American flag out, or the Uncle Sam outfit, put that out. If you ever wanted to get, you know, knocked down, not only get cut down to size on not only your character creation, but how generic you are, put out a character you think looks like you and then have everybody go, ah, oh, it's Bernie Burns. Oh, it's Colin Moriarty. Oh, my God. It's Dan Reichert. Oh, my. Yeah. And I was like, right. No, everyone in this industry kind of looks the same when we're wearing a hat. All right. Well, that sucks. Anyways, played 4 to 5 hours of it last night. Shut it off. Went to bed. Woke up this morning and I can't stop thinking about this game.
Ah.
You said it. It's divisive.
Yeah.
I feel like you're the only one that I've seen like it.
Oh, no. There's really? There's dozens of us. No, it's... This is the problem, of course, with a divisive video game. Mm-hmm. A video game that, from its launch, was, hey, this isn't what you wanted. And everybody being like, mwah. Even me originally, like, I don't know. It's not my fucking Fallout if I can't play it single player, if it doesn't have NPCs, if it doesn't blah, blah, blah. So many people have been mad about that it's so hard to separate the wheat from the chaff, right? Got it. Like, wait. So are you playing it and mad, or are you watching it and being mad? And this, that, and the other, and da-da-da-da-da. A really good... connected at all. Today, I retweeted a Patricia Hernandez article. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you saw this from earlier.
I did not.
Article she wrote about how, since there's no NPCs in the game, right? Which isn't exactly true, but whatever. I'll get to it. There are players who played a lot in the beta who are going through and being NPCs.
Okay.
So there's a YouTuber who basically played a ton in the beta, and now he sets up a camp outside of Vault 76. So when new people come out, he's immediately like, hello, welcome to, you know, the capital, or the, wait, not the capital wasteland, West Virginia wasteland. Here's this, here's ammo, here's a gun. Like, he has all this stuff he's building at his camp and giving out to people for free.
That's so cool.
And then she was talking about in hers that, you know, she went around just giving people beers last night and talking to people. And that, it's night one, obviously, but this community is so nice right now and is so helpful. And even me. It happened last night. I hit level 5, and it's like, all right, cool. Now you can fight each other if you really want to. I'm like, fuck, here we go. It's going to be griefing left and right. You know what I mean? And nope, ran past all sorts of people. They didn't interact with me. Or there was this one time I was out on a mission killing all these scorched people, and this guy's next to me, and I'm like, oh, he's clearly doing the same thing I am. Stop, drop him an invite. He instantaneously joined my party. We ran around, shot the things, collected the things. I ran off to the next objective. He ran off to his and left the party. And I was like, huh, that's fucking worked the way it was supposed to, right? And like, Patricia's article is the fact that, all right, this community right now, obviously night one, is great. And it's not horrible. And they aren't griefing. They're working together and doing stupid little things and playing roles in it and really role-playing, right? And Jesse Cox, a friend of the show, quote tweeted me where I was like, this is awesome. And he's like, it's interesting. I think he had a podcast where he talked about it of, I wonder if... the bad, you know, juju around this, the vibes that people weren't enjoying it, scared off the audience, brought the audience down to such a close-knit group that is playing it for the right reasons that they're not being assholes to each other, right? Yeah. And I'm sure griefers are there and going to continue to be there and proliferate. But that wasn't what they were saying. So yeah, you are 100% correct that I have seen plenty of people being positive. They're like, oh yeah, blah, blah. Overwhelming though, it is people like, oh my god, dead in the water. I'll tweet anything about it. Just like, it looks horrible. And it's like, are you playing? And then there are people who are like, oh, I played all this stuff. I saw it today on Reset Era, I think it was. some guy said, you know, I'm level 57. Here's a screenshot to prove it. I'm pretty much done with this game. It's, you know, not a lot of content at the end, yada yada, or not a lot of content, period. And he's like, he put in whatever it was, you know, 30 hours in the beta, and now he's at like 55 or whatever, which is always interesting when you put in 55 hours in a game. You're like, wow, there's just not a lot to do here. I'm like, man, what were you doing? Like, what were you doing? Like, I'm 5 hours in level 6 or 7, and I'm like, I'm having a great time. You know what I mean? Like, maybe you didn't just, I don't know. I'm not going to judge how you play games. But I saw Jeff Gerstmann, friend of the show, be like, hey, man, I totally skipped the betas of this, and it's kind of bad. Like, I don't like this. And he's not wrong. Playing it, it is definitely a game I see all the problems in. I'm not sitting here telling you this is a flaw.
What are those
game.
Problems?
It looks like shit at times. It chugs at times, right? It's not the Fallout necessarily. You remember? It's weird not freezing time. Mm-hmm. It's weird going into my item management and then going into a terminal and hearing fucking things approach. I'm like, oh, fuck, right. You know what I mean? Like, the world is still moving without me. And I've seen people say, and I didn't run into it to my knowledge, but people say that, like, oh, man, I went in to do this thing, but it was already looted. And I was like, is that a problem? I didn't see that problem last night, but I don't know yet.
Okay.
IGN put up a piece from a reporter I don't remember. And it was an editorial talking about how playing alone is a lonely experience, and that he was finding the world empty and missing certain, you know, interactions you would have. Again, like the NPCs aren't there in the way of the usual deal, right? Of like, oh, hello, welcome, here's this thing. I run around the world, I see tons of people. There's, you know, there's people running around, you know, doing other vault dwellers doing all sorts of stuff around me. You know, we're using the same camps, we're running out and doing the same missions. Personally, last night in 5 hours of play, I didn't feel alone. I felt like, man, this is a Fallout game, and I appreciated to an extent, like, Fallout 4's story of I was a mother who was after my son, right?
Yeah.
It was good, but it kind of went on a long time, and then eventually there'd be, like, peaks to it, right? And then there was a lot of valleys, and then you'd forget, right? Because it's Fallout. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to fuck around and make this crazy suit or this thing. I'm going to build my stupid shanty house and whatever. Jen this morning, and this is, I think, a testament to the fact that I really like it, is that, you know, Jen this morning did the same thing she did with Assassin's Creed, which is like, so what did you think? And I started telling her anecdotes from the game.
Yeah.
Right? Of like, oh, and then this happened, and then that. And then I heard the mayor say he needed help, and I ran over there, and this is what the mayor, and it's, I was telling her stories that didn't make the world seem empty. And maybe that's just how I like to play Fallout. But last night I had, you know, the moment of like, all right, cool, you're out of the vault. The story is simple. Hey, it's, you know, we finally opened the vault doors. You guys have to repopulate the earth and refix and see what's out there, right? So literally, like, your orders are, here's your portable campsite, here's all this other stuff you get. You're going out there to help other people and build up a community, like, right? Like, it's not, this has happened, they stole this thing, blah, blah. It's Fallout story light, which I can understand turning certain people off. Mm-hmm. I think on paper it should turn me off. I like a narrative to my adventure, right?
Yeah.
But it is now a narrative that I'm building with I'm actually building with whoever I'm playing with or myself. And so last night it was very interesting of getting out. And I want to say, and I could be wrong, but for the first time ever, I got out. It's the world. I'm just exploring. Open up the pit boy. What radio station do I like? I like this radio station. And then just then listen to the radio while I wandered off and found stuff. And then I'm finding the holotapes, which I talked about before. They don't pause. You know, when you pause the screen, they keep going. Say magnifique. The holotapes I'm finding are actually really interesting.
Okay.
And it is that thing for me of, cool, I don't feel alone. Even though, no spoilers or anything, but, like, you leave and your first mission is really to try to track down the overseer from your vault. She's gone out. There's some clues. Go find her. And so you keep finding her tapes and she keeps talking. And her story is riveting, I feel, as, like, she's finding these things and what she's dealing with and how she's processing it. And then to find other people and, like, you know, this person here that ran away from her abusive husband, and you put that in, and I'm like, cool. Like, I don't feel like I'm empty. I actually feel like I'm getting the story at the clip I want, where I'm not, like, you know, how I guess it's open to interpretation, but when you sit there and talk to a Fallout character and they're just like, totally look like shit. They're talking to you. Yeah, it's like, this isn't really sucking me in, right? Yeah. Like, I do like hearing it while I craft a weapon and I do something.
Okay.
And so what it's nailing for me, and it could just be scratching the itch right now and giving me the hook I want, is, cool, it's exploration and it's looting. Mm-hmm. Where I'm going through, and I think the portable campsite is a brilliant idea this time around, right? Because before we had our bases in Fallout 4, where you'd go there, and that's where you have your armor, your workbenches and your armor benches and all that
and
jazz.
And there were enough of those around the map that eventually you had one just about everywhere.
Exactly. Yeah. The way they do it this time is you run into those things all the time. Like, you're running into armor benches and other benches, and like you know, I went... Perfect, I think, example of like, man, this feels like a real Fallout game, is that, all right, cool, I was off to hit up this airport mission, and then even further north of that was this mayor thing I wanted to do, right? So I'm just walking, as I'm walking, I see like, oh, that's a mine over there. Oh, neat. Oh, cool. I'm going to go inside. Oh, I'm going to go deeper. I'm still going, you know what I mean? I'm going to go deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And at some point, yeah, I find my first shotgun and the shotgun shells, and I'm doing all this stuff, and it's like, oh, you're over encumbered. I'm like, oh, yeah, of course I am. What do I want to drop? Oh, you know, it's only going to eat it. I can still move. It's just going to eat away my health. All right. I go a little bit further. Oh, here's the bench. All right. Break down all my junk. Give me the thing. Okay, great. That was just a bench that was there. Fucking fantastic.
Just very well designed.
Exactly.
Having it in the right
spot.
That
I would run into this spot and I'd have too much shit. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Do that, you know, come out, go back to the real mission. It's not, yeah, it's hard to describe, I guess, and it's weird of like last night, you know, I wanted to get my sea legs before I really teamed up with anybody. And a great example, Tim, is that I'm running down the street last night off to my next objective. I'm level 2 or whatever. I've only been playing for 45 minutes. And I pass a dude who runs by me in this astronaut, or no, he was in the full on power armor. And I just hear, hey, man. And I just kept going, and then I went, and I could hear him still running behind me. And I was like, "Is this a best friend, or am I gonna get grief?" Turn around, it's Grimecraft. Grimecraft's like, "Greg, what up, man?" And I didn't wear a headset; I was talking to Jenna or whatever. So I just did the emotes and stuff. Yeah. And he was like, "Oh yeah," and then I just ran away because I was like, "All right, cool. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing yet. I wanted to be able
to
talk at length about this game or have like real thought out opinions, right? So I wanted to ease myself into it before I teamed up. But like I said, then I ran into the guy doing a mission and joined up with him. No problem.
I'm just liking the idea of like walking across a post apocalyptic real wasteland in Grimecraft, running out.
You know,
of the
Grimecraft
woods and
would be
hi.
There. Selling his wares.
Would be there. Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly.
Amazing.
No, so it's I get why it's turning people off 100%. Mm-hmm. I get that, like, oh, there's no story. Oh, it's empty. Now, granted, it's a wasteland. It's a nuclear wasteland. I don't expect it to be. But it's the normal thing of just, yeah, like, okay, you know, things don't look that great. It's all the Bethesda. Well, that's how Bethesda is, right? But that's how Bethesda's always been. I figured out in quotes because I'm an idiot, VATS. You know, I talked about that before. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't freeze time, but I wasn't really using it. You know, this time around, like in the beta, I just found the stupid pipe guns that are like held together, you know, by wood and glue and suck. I was lucky enough this time, you know, to loot because now I was actually taking my time looting everything. Found a really nice handgun, right? Souped up the barrel. And like first encounter, I'm, you know, freehand aiming or whatever and shooting. It's like, oh man, it actually fires a bunch in rapid succession. It's got a good rate of fire. Somebody came up to me, you know, eventually I finally hit up VATS for the first time, and it was like, oh, cool. Like, this percentage shows how locked on I am pretty much, right? So like once I wrapped my head around it, it actually became easier to use that and great. Because the other thing that I found, and you know, I've done my best to, for the most part, stay at arm's length from this of like,
yeah,
I want to play it. I need to know. I need to figure it out on my own. Last night, you know, I'm running through and like in one of the first areas I come into, there's these things, the characters like scorched wanderers, right? Like scorched, there's this whole scorched plague going on that I learned more as I played. But I'm in there, I'm like, oh, okay, cool. They're ghouls or whatever. And I machete the first couple or whatever. And then one comes around and starts shooting a gun at me. And I'm like, wait, what the fuck? And like, oh, they're not ghouls. They're actually their own new thing. The scorched wanderer that is losing their humanity and super full of aggression, but can kind of talk and can kind of use tools. And it was like, wow, this is a new fucking way to do it. But then in the flip of what we're talking about, of it not, you know, not being a traditional Fallout game and maybe a turnoff, it's like, right now in these early levels, I noticed I was taking a lot of damage without really having it hurt me. Like, cause it is like, okay, cool. Like, how do you, obviously Bethesda not great at first person shooting, right? And then that's why they always had VATS and all these different things. Trying to figure out the weaknesses and strengths of each one of the systems, I guess, right? And so by the end of it, I was like, oh man, that was actually rewarding. And oh man, I actually fought all those things. And usually in a Fallout game, right? Like, I'm gonna conserve all my ammo and not do it. But this one, I'm already collecting so much stuff. I'm already having the benches to make gunpowder. I find myself super excited to go home tonight and play to unlock the blueprints to make my camp better. And I fucking hated making my base in Fallout. But the fact that the camp isn't beating me over the head with the, hey, make a really nice base. It is just like, once I put down the thing, I can place my workbenches anywhere I want.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't sleep on the floor because you'll be more prone to disease. And there's little stuff like that. They're doing a great job of easing me into these systems that I thought were going to be so off-putting. Of like, even talking to some of the IGN people at the Halloween party, they were like, oh man, you got to eat and drink every 5 seconds. And I was like, I've never really been a fan of that in games. Like Red Dead, I was like, oh, that really reminds me I'm in a video game world here. I didn't find it to be a detriment yesterday, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's one of those things, it went slow enough that by the time they even said something, I was like, oh, well, I've been eating because of I needed health and
stuff. Right, so as it ended up being happening organically.
And I think the most interesting, like, you know, people are saying the game looks like shit and all this stuff. I'm like, are you playing it? And I'm not even trying to be an asshole about it. You can play it and think it's ass. Or it's ass. I totally get it. But like playing it last night and just running around doing it, Jen was watching and she's like, so we can play this together, right? I was like, yeah, do you want to play this together? And she's like, yeah, can we get a copy for me? I'm like, fuck yes, we can. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like there's something about it. And I think it's just at its most base level, it's got that Fallout formula. Fun. I'm like, cool, what's over that hill? What is that thing? You hear a strange radio request, right? Or radio signal, and you go investigate and you find it. And so I'm finding these holotapes that are making me care about the world. I'm exploring it at my own pace. It was easy to jump in and join. Like, you know, right now, I think what we're doing is we have to work tonight for the showcase. Tomorrow for Friday will be the last night I can really play for a while. And so it's going to be, I think, Jen and me running out into the wasteland, and I think Grimecraft wants to join up, and Gary Widow wants to join up at certain times. And it's just like, I can see certain games, right? Like even Division. When we're playing the Division, there's that moment of like, oh man, we're talking over something important, aren't we? You know what I mean? Like, oh man, we're really like, what is Joe Farrow saying to us right now about all this shit? Whereas in Fallout, where that can be, I'm putting words into people's mouths here, that can be lonely. You know what I mean? I guess of like, maybe there is more dead air than you're used to, or maybe there is that thing. For me, it was almost peaceful. Of like, that's how I usually play Fallout to begin with, is running around just doing shit in the quiet and figuring it out. So like, why not fill that with a conversation?
Well, I like quiet exploratory games. That's one of the most intriguing things about what you're saying here. Yeah. I mean, I think about that Metroid formula of a lonely, quiet place that you're exploring. And I always kind of like that. And Fallout does lean into the spooky. And I tend to play single player a lot like you. I think about what you're describing here. And then I think I could play that Fallout game this winter, or Wasteland 2 Director's Cut just came out on Switch. And I could go to, you know, I could go look at Wasteland again. Which is going to be the better Fallout game to play this winter? Vastly different experiences.
Well, I mean, from what I understand, Wasteland.
Yeah.
People love Wasteland.
Well, Wasteland's incredible.
Wasteland, I played it, and I was like, ooh, okay, I see what you're doing. Not for me. This is a little too nerdy for me.
Is it? Okay, I wondered about that. But I look at how there's effectively, I mean, Wasteland came out a long time ago, or Wasteland 2 did, but now it's on Switch.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I could take another peek at that.
Yeah.
You know, and take it with me everywhere.
I mean, like,
or
that,
I could jump into 76. I'm not sure which way to go.
I mean, I here's my thing. If you like Fallout games, I would say at least try it. Yeah. And like, it sucks that like the beta's come and gone, right? Because I feel like that would have been helpful. Yeah. I went over to the Reset Era thread today on the ride in. I'm like, what is everybody else saying? Because again, I just like, I can't stop thinking about this game. What's everybody else thinking about it? And the Era thread was like back and forth of people who were really having a great time with it. This guy who's played it a lot who didn't like it. Some people talking about the fact of, look at how Guild Wars does group events, right? There's nothing like that in this game. Because even last night when I got, but it was like early on, I got to a city and I was like, hey, there's an event going on. Do all this stuff. And I was like, nah, I'm definitely not ready to tackle that. I want to understand my world before I do that. How long is Fallout 76 going to keep its hooks in me? I said to Jen today over coffee when we were talking about it, I'm like, I really want to go home and play it, but like, we're going away this weekend and it's not a game I'm like, oh man, I should really pack the PS4 for. Yeah. But then again, I am really excited to finish this fucking meeting with you tonight and go home and play a little bit, right? Yeah. That'd have been my hope in between this show and Games Daily that I could have done something like that. Mm-hmm. But it's just interesting. I didn't expect to like it as much as I like it.
I mean, that's huge.
And it is, again, like I'm saying, I totally get why people don't like it. You know, I can see what they're saying. And like, you know, of course it crashed on me last night where I was just doing something and everything was fine and then it wasn't. Yeah, I was back out to the main screen.
I'll give the Bethesda shrug for the rest of my life. I like their games enough that I don't care that they break.
And it's exciting to see them dipping this toe. I guess they already did it with Elder Scrolls Online, but into the Fallout universe being online and where this is going to go and what it's going to evolve into.
And that's another part of this that's interesting, because I hated ESO. I really actively hated ESO, and I thought I was going
to
love it.
I really wanted to love it because I love Skyrim so much.
Yeah.
And when I came, if you remember, it was going to be day and date, PC and PS4, got booted from the console. So I actually played it on PC for a couple hours.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? I'm interested enough and I like this enough to try when it comes to PlayStation. And then something else had come to PlayStation 4 and I never ever went back.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that I enjoy this one. Also, now I'm speaking out of turn because I just glanced. Seems like a very attainable platinum. Just putting that out there. Okay. Seems like a very obtainable platinum if that's something you're interested in.
That's the hard. I generally, you and I tend to agree on most games.
Yeah.
And so I'm really interested in this. But yet, when I think about, I'm like, well, he's describing a group combat exploration oriented Fallout, and that's exactly what ESO was to Elder Scrolls, and I hated it. So I'm like,
But here's the thing,
I love
right?
Fallout so much.
Here's the thing that's interesting after one night of playthrough, which I obviously could change and morph into a million things as I put more hours into it. I'd be happy to keep playing it by myself.
Okay.
It's a world I want to keep seeing, and I really don't. That's cool. I don't expect it to be that every time I turn it on, I'm going to be grouping up with people.
Yeah.
But then, you know, reading the Patricia article today and thinking about Friday, it is that thing of like, I think I will always keep a mic on me just in case, right? Yeah. Like it was a pain. That's like cool. Last night when I ran into Grimey, like the main reason I didn't say anything is because the headphones are over there and the thing. I'm just talking to Jen. Like I don't want to, but there's something cool about it. There's something to it. Again, like I'm not, this isn't me coming out and being like, man, 8.5. You know what I mean? Like there, it's still, it's a janky ass game and it's a fun experience. And
no, I think I ought to go in and give it a few hours, but I also need to finish Odyssey or at least get
and that. And I mean, that's another one for me, right? Is like, I'm on platinum pace for Odyssey right now where I was really starting to put it in today. Today as we record, this is the day they dropped the patch to, do the visual swaps and they put out a new giant boss to fight or whatever. Mm-hmm. Right. This is going to keep me from that.
Yeah,
I really thought I thought there was a high chance of me jumping into Fallout last night and being like, cool, get it, I'm fine, and bouncing out back to Odyssey tonight.
Yeah,
and when we're done. But in reality, what it is like, really want to get back out there and just wander around more and see more stuff. Yeah, so we'll see. It's very interesting that. Yeah, I'd love to know in the comments and in the post show people who are playing it what they think of it.
I've been playing a very different game, Greg.
What have you been playing? Whoa! Oh, that's a Pokeball. It's Andy, Pokemon, get your camera.
Pokemon, let's go. Pikachu and Eevee. Of course, I've been playing the Eevee version because Team Eevee all the way. Let's start with this thing.
Okay, sure.
I love this thing.
All right.
Now, if you're an audio listener, this is the weird Pokeball thing.
The Pokemon Ball Go
Pokemon
Plus.
Ball.
I don't know. It's the I don't remember what the actual name was. Pokeball it's a Pokeball Plus Go. No, I know it's a Pokeball.
For,
I know that.
For ignoramuses like me that don't know a Raichu from a Pikachu, what is that thing and what does it do?
So this is a controller to be able to play the game. It's an analog stick here, and you can click in. There's another button on the top.
That's very cute.
And then when you want to catch the Pokemon in Pokemon Go or Pokemon Let's Go, you go like that and whatever.
Okay.
And it makes me feel like a 9-year-old.
Yeah.
It's awesome. There is a joy to it where I'm just like, I thought I was like, this is dumb and gimmicky and I don't like it at all. Super into it. This entire game built around being able to play with one hand where it's just moving around.
So
one button is yes, one button is no.
Are you holding the Switch and playing like this?
Nope. It's, well,
where's
it's
the Switch?
On the TV.
Oh,
or tabletop. Smart, whatever. And you can just play, and that's it. And it's fucking super awesome. I love how easy and simple the controls are, where it literally is just like move like for what attack you want, select it, or go back in menu by clicking this guy.
Okay.
It's super great. But you can also use it with just a Joy-Con, and it's the same experience. Without this, is it worth the money? Not necessarily.
How much is it?
I don't even remember. But
Kevin, I got a price point on $249 US.
Yeah, it comes with Mew and all that stuff. But the game itself.
Oh, I turned it on. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
is that a problem?
There's Pokemon in it, and that's the
other. Are they okay?
Like
Pikachu, can you hear me?
Pikachu doesn't go in his ball, Greg. Come on, you should fucking know that.
How would I fucking know that?
That's his one thing.
No, electricity is his one thing, jackass.
Hate you.
Ketchup is his one thing.
No, it's not. That's one of his many things.
Nice.
On the Pokemon Go side of this, not the Let's Go side, it's like when you have it around, if you're just walking down the street and stuff, random, it'll just vibrate randomly. And it's like you can catch Pokemon that way.
That's fun.
Whatever. Pokemon Let's Go. It's so funny how similar it is to Fallout 76 because it was a game that was announced that everyone was like, this isn't what we want from this.
We
expect something and this looks wrong. We expected Gen 8 of Pokemon or a remake in the style of a proper Pokemon generation. And instead, we're getting Pokemon Go fused into a core Pokemon title. And that's exactly what this is. And I think it's a success.
All right. Really?
And what surprises me is I'm not alone. The reviews for this game is currently at 81 on Metacritic. And everybody seems to agree this is good.
Yeah.
And the Go mechanics work. I will say I prefer to play the game in handheld mode because the gyro is awesome. It always has been on the Switch where it's like that stuff actually works. That type of motion control actually works. The flinging, when I have to fling the Joy-Con or the Pokeball stuff, it is so hit or miss, yeah. where it's like, that's not what I meant to do. Oh, it caught him though. Cool. Great. Right, whatever.
Got it done.
But it's like, there is it feels really good with the gyro and just hitting the buttons to go.
Man, let me ask you this. As a non-Pokemon guy.
Yes. Right?
So the Metacritic score is good. People acting surprised. I remember there being a lot of frustration in the Pokemon community when this was first announced.
Yep.
Kat Bailey tweeted something recently. I'm paraphrasing here, where she said, you know, me back like in May when this was, you know, like, oh, it's this watered down Pokemon. You know, me now, like, oh, you know, can't play. Why were people so concerned? Pokemon Go, on the list of IGN's top 100 games of all time. Pokemon.
Thanks, Goldfarb.
One of the all-time great JRPGs. Mm-hmm. Why was there so much skepticism about a union between these two extraordinarily innovative and successful games?
Because you're taking a baby game and making it an even more baby game.
Okay.
And I think that's the problem, is that Pokemon has always had a depth if you look for it.
Uh-huh. Oh, sure, yeah.
And if you didn't, there's not much there.
Okay.
And I feel like taking the original Pokemon games, specifically Yellow, remaking that and dumbing it down further is like, who is this for? Because the original Yellow was played by children.
So take that and tell me how they dodged that bullet.
I don't think that they completely dodged the bullet. Oh, okay. But I think that they made it an enjoyable enough experience that it's fun and worth playing. It's definitely not my favorite Pokemon game. Yeah. Not by far. But I do think that the Go elements that they added don't get in the way of the game in terms of gameplay. I actually think that it fixes a lot of things.
Okay.
The random battles in Pokemon games are grindy. And at some point, they're not fun. It's just a thing that you're doing that's holding you back from getting to the next story beat, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like this game does a great job of seeing the Pokemon in the world, makes it, the visuals of this game mixed with seeing the Pokemon before you fight them.
Because it's not random anymore, right? You see somebody.
You see them on the world map.
Yeah.
It's the closest we've got to playing through the Pokemon cartoon.
Okay.
And like this is everything, like, I dreamed of this game when I was younger. Didn't think it would have like the catching mechanics and stuff. But I think that there's enough trainer battles in this game, because that was the big issue, is wild Pokemon encounters in this one. You can only use Go mechanics or gyro to catch them. There's no fight.
Okay.
It's just throw the ball at them. It's Pokemon Go. Throw the berries, throw the ball. That's it. Whereas trainer battles are traditional Pokemon trainer fights.
And again, for my ignorance, this is the first main-ish, it's not a mainline Pokemon game, but this is the first console-esque Pokemon game, handheld-esque Pokemon game, high-profile, Sword Domain, to feature non-random battles?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's Yeah.
Chrono Trigger, Earthbound, Dragon Quest XI, but not, that's amazing.
Yeah. No, it's all
in a game about collection.
And that was the thing. It was like you walk in tall grass and they're going to pop up. And it's like, I feel like Pokemon has handled that very well. But I do feel like from a gameplay mechanic, it slowed things down.
Yeah.
And being able to run around them and not fight the ones you don't want to. But sorry.
I took you off
trainers,
track.
There is the big worry was there's not going to be enough traditional Pokemon battles. That is not the case. Okay. There are so many trainers in this game. Mm. There's just the right amount of, I'm a little over halfway done now.
Okay.
And I'm taking my time and I'm enjoying it. But there's enough trainer battles that I'm like, oh yeah, this is Pokemon. It definitely is easy mode. Like all your Pokemon get shared experience. So everyone's leveling up really fast. And there's a lot of that, but it's like, that's all stuff that is tedious as fuck. So it's like on
these
one
are quality
hand,
of life fixes. To
it's
an extent.
Quality of life stuff, but it's not a perfect game for a hardcore gamer because they want a bit more to do and a bit more to work on to feel like they accomplished something. Mm-hmm. This game is like, it's the chill. You're just going through, man. You're just having a good time. Mm. Like it's coming at you and being given to you at your pace of moving forward. But it's not something that you're like, I need to use strategy to win.
Mm-hmm.
Like I've only died once and it was because I was being extremely careless.
Okay.
But that's always kind of been what Pokemon is. The biggest issue I have with the game is because it's one for one based off Pokemon Yellow's original map.
Yeah.
We're talking about a Game Boy screen that was 4x3, right?
Uh-huh. Not entirely.
Or whatever. Yeah. It's square-esque.
Square. Yeah.
4x4 then?
Yeah.
When you take that grid-based system where exploring, and they moved so slow because there was no running in that game. It was just you move, and as you go, every dungeon, every city, every area was built around what you couldn't see right off screen, not knowing that there's a wall there, not knowing that the right way to go is down. You know what I mean? When you're in Mount Moon, it was like this labyrinth that you had to figure out the puzzle of. In this game, because it's the same maps and because it's widescreen and because you can dodge all the, or there's no random battles and you can just dodge the Pokemon, Mount Moon used to be the first dungeon in the game.
Yeah.
And used to take you 30 minutes to an hour, okay. Especially if it was your first time. Now it's like, it's a 3-minute jaunt. You're in, you're out.
Oh, you see, because you can see exactly where to go.
Because you see so much, you know what ladders to avoid. You know, like, where's a dead end. You know, there's just an item.
So they don't do any dungeon, like, screen blocking or anything like that. No, like, mist comes in from the sides.
Nope.
Interesting choice.
It's weird. There's, like, just a lot of quality of life things. Like, there's no more HMs, thank God. And there's, like, you don't need to go to a Pokemon Center to mess with your Pokemon box of dropping Pokemon off. If you want to switch them in and out of your party, you can do that live wherever you are on the map, which is super great. But it's all this stuff just makes it even easier and easier and easier and easier. So at some point, it's just like, this is Pokemon, everyone always used to say, is baby's first RPG. Uh-huh. Like, this really is, in a lot of ways, baby's first video game.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean that it's not really great. Mm-hmm. Like, it's still Pokemon. There's still such a cool world that they've built, and going and seeing all the gym trainers and seeing the way that they've kind of reimagined this world with the modern graphics and look and the music and everything is so awesome to me, because it's such a nostalgia trip. But another thing that I'm like, I like on one hand, but I don't on the other, and I wish they went a little further with, at least so far, is they've added in characters from the original Pokemon games that, like, are making appearances. Like, it's not spoilers to say that, like, Red and Blue are in the game.
Okay.
Pikachu
is in the game as well. But the way that they show up is unexpected.
Okay.
They're not where you would imagine them to be.
Missing People posters.
And
the newspaper.
And you'd expect them there. But yeah, no, it's cool seeing them come through, but I wish there was more of that. There's certain elements that, like, they dive a little deeper into the Elite Four and who they are. And I'm like, this is cool. But then you expect more of it, and then it doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I don't know. I'm definitely loving this game. I'm loving playing through it. And I'm shocked that everyone else is enjoying it as much as they are, because there was so much naysayers, like so many naysayers of people being like, this isn't the Pokemon game that we want. This Pokemon game is going to sell a bazillion copies.
So you don't have children. But if you did, would this be how you'd introduce him to Pokemon?
So that's my problem. I do have a Gia. And here's the thing. I've been looking at this game as, this is going to be her gateway drug to Pokemon. This is going to be the time that I can explain to her.
Did you just compare your girlfriend to a child?
In terms of video games. Hasn't played video games.
Okay.
And she doesn't play games at all.
Okay. I'm just trying to get you in trouble.
She's tiny.
There's a lot of comparisons that you could make between them.
She loves crayons.
She does love crayons.
Does she really love crayons?
No, she doesn't. But I was excited for this game, mostly because I wanted her to experience Pokemon for the first time. As I was playing through it, I'm like, I'm enjoying this myself a lot more than I expected to. But also, it lacks a lot of the magic that I associate with Pokemon, that I'm like, I don't know that I want her to have this as her first experience.
Why wouldn't Pokemon Go be the gateway drug for her to Pokemon?
Because Pokemon Go that's cool and it's cute and fine, but it's like, that's not why I love Pokemon. I love Pokemon for the story and the characters and the world that they built and this kind of, like, epic journey to be the very best, you know? Okay. What's up, Kev?
Why not start with Omega Red on the DS?
With Fire Red?
Is it Fire Red?
On Game Boy Advance?
No, on the DS. Isn't that Omega Red? Isn't that the, like,
Omega Ruby?
Ruby
on the 3DS?
Yeah.
Because those games suck.
And, like, whoa!
Yeah, and, like, I'm not, the third gen of Pokemon is not going to be what I want to introduce her to.
What about the ones where it's Aloha Pikachu and Aloha Charmeleon?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They were fun in Aloha Pokemon.
Alolan. Alolan. I don't know. It's interesting that these games are being as well received as they are. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good sign. We got Gen 8 next year.
Yeah.
And I'm very excited for that, but I am having a great time with this one. I think I'm going to end up, once I'm done with it, giving it to Gia to give a shot and just see what she has to say about it. But yeah, it's a weird one, but it's weird to me that the Fallout 76 conversation is so similar, but I feel like the end result is so different.
Oh, sure, yeah. Yours is way more positively received.
Where there's a positive,
I haven't
end
seen
to
it
this.
Many negative people for Pokemon.
For Pokemon.
Yeah. For Pokemon.
Yeah, and supposedly everyone's telling me the post game gets a bit more challenging, and I expect that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. So we're going to save the Red Dead talk for next week because we're running a little long on this. Gotta get to the Game Awards.
Baby. I won't be here, just FYI.
Did you like the end of Red Dead?
No.
Oh.
I mean, main story loved it. Epilogue just went too long.
Okay.
I'll just say that.
And give your thoughts. I'm going to go pee.
Andy, take a seat.
He's gone. It's incredibly hard. Come to the main chair, Andy Cortez, number one games journalist. Sorry, Jason Dreyer.
It's incredibly hard to talk about it without spoiling it.
Sure.
It is. It's extremely impossible. Difficult. I agree with that. So what are we going to do about that?
I don't know.
You can't say why you didn't like it in any...
It would be extremely difficult to talk about the end of this game in any critical terms without spoiling it.
Is it a tonal turn? Is that the problem?
No, there's a very... So I loved the end. I thought it was great. Andy has a very different opinion. And for us to express how those are different will require spoilers.
Yeah.
Kevin, just put up spoilers, bro.
Everybody mute your stuff right now.
This is it. This is your chance,
this
will
take like 20 minutes. Are you sure you want to do this?
I can do it really quick.
Andy can do it really quick.
Yeah, but I can't.
Well, then you'll just have to wait till next week, then.
But then he's just going to say that he didn't like it, and then that won't be good.
Then you'll say you did like it.
Yeah,
it's simple. Okay. I don't know. Right. Spoilers Bros is up.
I don't have spoilers.
All right, it's not up. If you are YouTubing or watching or listening, this is your chance to mute it. How will you know when to come back? It's when Andy leaves.
And when Andy leaves. Okay.
When number one game shows.
And if you're an audio listener,
people might have trouble. Yikes. All right.
Andy, just say, oh, you're right. Yeah, I see what you're doing there.
I think the whole lead up towards the end of the game, the core story, is so fucking well done.
Yeah,
it's beautiful. It's heartbreaking. You see all the sort of gears in motion, and you know that this isn't going to end well for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And not everybody is going to get out of this either alive or just in a positive way. And it's fucking so great. It's so cinematic, and it feels like just a really well-written movie.
And it ends not with a bang, but a whimper. Like, it just, you watch it just unravel. Instead of it being like, here's a big climactic. Yeah. No, it's just like...
And it leads up after time. Like, you know, like you just see everything happening, and it's beautiful.
It's fantastic.
The game ends, Arthur dies, and along in the game, he turns out he has
tuberculosis,
and is dying and dying as the game goes on. And
does that start to affect gameplay? You can't run as fast.
It starts to affect
your food doesn't benefit you as much anymore.
That's cool.
Yeah, he starts to waste away in front of your eyes.
Your eyes are like always red and stuff. Sure. He's always coughing. It's really heartbreaking, and the game ends with him dying. Right.
Yeah.
And I think it's beautiful. I think it's like super well done. Dutch has turned his back on you. Blah blah blah. Right.
Yeah. And not just you, also on John.
Sure. Yeah. So yeah. John is left behind, and Dutch says, "We couldn't save him, Arthur. We couldn't save him, Arthur."
Thank you. I was waiting for the impressions.
We couldn't save him, Arthur.
Yeah.
And so the game's done. It's very, very, very sad.
All of this wonderfully woven into this incredible story about a Native American tribe desperately trying to deal with what's happening to them at that moment, and Dutch manipulating their difficulties for his benefit.
Acting as if he is on their side, but really it's a distraction so they can peace the fuck out and leave because the law's on them, right?
And,
or whatever.
And Arthur just finally being like, no.
Yeah.
No.
We can't do this. We have to.
This is a bridge
too
far. Nice. This is just
good job,
too
Arthur.
Far.
Moment at the end where steam hits Arthur's eyes and they're trying to get away from a thing, and then he's like, and he sees Dutch, and Dutch just walks away. And it's like, oh, fuck.
He leaves him
Luckily,
to die.
You get saved by one of the Native Americans, and it's just really, really cool. Anyway, so why I don't like the epilogue.
Yeah. Sure.
Epilogue, you start off, and you're playing as John Marston.
I'm sorry, who?
John Marston.
Thank you.
Very good.
We're Dutch somewhere out there. Anyway, so John Marston.
He's good.
The epilogue is way too long, I think. I think it drags on for it's essentially setting up Red Dead Redemption 1.
Sure.
Getting Beecher's Hope, the farm that Abigail's always wanted. Abigail's like, get your shit straight or I'm out or whatever.
Yeah, because it starts with like you in a wagon with Abigail in a town homeless having been driven out after shooting somebody.
Sure. Yeah.
And ends with you.
I'm just looking for some honest work, Abigail.
Yeah.
So you get that honest work, you work on a farm, and eventually you start making money, and then she's like, you got to quit doing all this bullshit or whatever, or else I'm going to leave you. She eventually leaves. You go to Beecher's Hope. You buy a farm. You start setting everything up. You meet up with Uncle, and I forgot.
Sadie Adler, Uncle Charles, but one by one. It's not like, oh, we're getting the gang back together.
It's really cool.
And everybody's been separated for a long time, and Sadie's had this incredible story going on off in the corner of all this. Anyway, please continue.
I think it just leads up. I think it goes on way too long. And it also, in my opinion, does a disservice to Arthur's story. Mm. Because it feels like as you're scooping up fucking horse shit in a barn, it's like, Arthur just died, and that's really what I cared about. And now I'm kind of doing these tasks that are supposed to feel very, you know, like chores.
Mundane, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I just, I feel like it takes away, as I was doing this, I was like, oh yeah, Arthur died. And that was like a really big moment. And yeah. Now I kind of wish it ended there. It is setting it up so that post-game, you do have Beatrice Hope, and Abigail eventually comes back, and you get a close relationship with your son. You finally go and kill Micah. And you go to look for Micah, and Sadie Adler's like, he's up here. And then Dutch comes out, and Dutch shoots Micah, and it's really cool.
You have a moment that completely recontextualizes John and Dutch's encounters in the first game. You're just like, it's one of those things where everything that happened in Red Dead 1 gets reframed.
A new lens, yeah.
Yeah, and cool. It's really well done with that. But and you are right about there's a lot going on in the pacing around the farm and things like that. But well, yeah. Please continue.
I just feel like it did a disservice to the end of Arthur's story, which I cared about more. I like Arthur more than John Marston.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Not only is it, I think just his whole redemption arc is just so great. Beautiful storytelling. But yeah, I feel like it went on way too long. They could have certainly like compressed the shit out of it because you beat the story at about 75% done with the main story is done at 75%.
Okay.
And the rest of it is like a lot of other stuff with John Marston doing chores, trying to build your house. I just think it dragged on way too long.
Counterpoint. You're wrong. No, the counterpoint on that for me would be that unless you've been especially exploratory, about half the map opens up at precisely the moment that you move into Beecher's Hope and all that. You suddenly discover the entire Red Dead Redemption 1 map is also there.
Oh, yeah.
In the world.
There have been rumors about that, right?
Yeah, it's all there. Talking about that, so yeah. This whole other world has opened up to you to explore there. I mean, you could go there ahead of time, but you were strongly discouraged from heading that way, and there's not a lot to do there at that point. You head into Beecher's Hope, you begin to build this, and the pacing of that story, that second act story, is precisely made so that you're like, wow, I have like half this game to go discover now. And so you're coming back to these moments the same way you did with Arthur's story. And it's still a much shorter story than Arthur's story, and I think told at about the right pace to get the point across. And it is, in some very interesting parallel ways, a sort of a cloudy mirror of what happens to Arthur. You see a lot of Arthur in John. It's Arthur's wedding ring that goes onto Abigail's finger when you propose in game to her there. The one that the lady you met in the first game sent back to you.
Sure.
The one she refused is the one that ends up putting that part of the story together. You end up effectively on the same date that Arthur and Mary ended up on in New Orleans. But this one ends happily, which makes it all the worse when you're watching it all unravel in front of you.
Great post-credits, though. Post-credits are going through, and they show you what other characters that got away safely from all the madness are up to. It's really cool seeing them thrive and be okay. I forgot the guy's name, the Leatherman / cook.
Mm-hmm.
Pearson?
Pearson is like in his own shop now, and he's like working his thing. It's like, oh, cool. It's great seeing these people thrive and be happy and not be...
downtrodden,
dead.
Some of them are, and it ends differently for all of them.
No, sure.
I mean, it's creepy. There's a shot in the credit sequence where you see Ross and the other guy looking down the hill at the farm, looking at Beecher's home. And you've just worked so hard. Unlike Andy, I felt very invested in what was happening to John.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I'm like, I finally built all this. Oh my God, this is all going to be taken away from me.
Gotcha.
And I felt like I liked John less at the beginning of this game than I did. This game makes you see what a jerk John is a lot.
Yeah, sure.
But by the end of the terrible game, father. He's a very different man, and that makes Arthur's story all the more meaningful to me and made me like Red Dead 1 more. Because John in Red Dead 1 seems kind of listless and just like, are you fucking kidding me? And now I understand why.
Just,
like,
just tighten it up.
I know it's tight. I thought they nailed it.
I would die in random moments killing games. It's like, just the end. I wanted you to end already. You know, like fucking.
I want to go to bed.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you, Andy, number one games journalist. That's the end of Red Dead spoilers. No more Red Dead spoilers. Andy, can I ask a favor? Can you fill us with water for me, please? I'm sorry. I love you. You're good. You want to be part of the Game Awards?
A lot heavier.
Oh, it's because it's got.
I thought it was like a rubber.
No,
pee and lost control.
Do you want to do Game Awards stuff, Andy?
Yeah.
Awesome. Before we get to the Game Awards predictions, ladies and gentlemen, this episode of the Kind of Funny Games Cast is brought to you by Movement. Let's talk about Movement. Movement watches, sunglasses, and accessories are designed in LA, and the styles are super sleek, clean, and fashion forward. It's true. Movement watches start at just $95. You're looking at $400 to $500 for the same quality from traditional brands. Clean, minimal design, and really quality products. Cool Greg loves his gold one. He's wearing it all the time. Gia, myself, you, we all wear the sunglasses whenever we're going out. Movement sunglasses, man. They're money. You know, you look at it, and by money, I mean they're good looking, but money, not that expensive.
Oh,
right.
When you go to Movement.
You want ice? Sorry.
No.
And now it's time to give yourself something special for the holidays this year. Movement did all the hard work this holiday season so you wouldn't have to, and they made awesome gift boxes and packaging. If you need help giving the perfect gift this season but don't know where to start, the guys over at Movement Watches got your back. Remember, Movement, that's MVMT. They've curated all their favorite styles into special gift boxes for you so you can absolutely crush this holiday season without the added stress. You can get 15% off today with free shipping and free returns by going to MVMT.com/kinda. Movement's launching new styles on their site all the time. Check out their latest at MVMT.com/kinda. That's MVMT.com/kinda. Join the movement.
Do it.
And now it's time, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to do our Game Awards 2018
Game Awards.
Predictions.
Worlds
will change.
All right.
Will you? That's the tagline.
Oh, I knew the worlds will change. I didn't know the will you.
I've seen the will you.
I'm probably going to stay the same. If I'm being honest, I'm going to watch Game Awards, enjoy it. I'm going down to LA to be there. I'm probably going to enjoy it. I'm not going to change, I bet.
Yeah.
I fully intend to change as much as possible.
Change.
You know what they say about caterpillars? They can't change their spots.
That is not what they say about caterpillars.
Is this the noise they make?
Yeah.
They're so small you can't hear them. You need really good microphones.
Yeah.
So, I want to start by going through all of the nominees.
Got it.
And what we're going to do is predict who we think is going to win.
Oh, okay. Not who we think should win, who we think is going
to win. We should say what we would vote for.
About who, we're going to talk about that. But really, the focus of this is predicting who we think is going to win.
Ooh, that's a tough one.
Right?
You sure you want to hear that, Andy?
Because a lot of this stuff, we're going to have a lot of conversations towards the end of the year about like our game, game of the year. Yeah.
The real game awards, they call them.
Yeah.
That is what they call them.
Kind of like the real Ghostbusters.
Well, actually, in that scenario, Jeff is definitely the real Ghostbusters, and we are definitely the Ghostbusters with the monkey.
The Funimation one. Yeah. All right. Monkey in a hat. Monkey in a hat, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's a good hat.
So it's going to be
So are we starting at the back, or are you starting?
Let's start a game of the year. Let's start big.
Oh, you want to start big. The reason I want to do
that,
okay.
The reason I want to do that is I feel like when we vote on the Game Awards, when we talk about the Game Awards, when other people are deciding what they think should win, they keep the whole thing in mind. Right?
Right.
Right. Because this is where we go of, okay, if I'm giving Game of the Year to this, then I try to give best direction nod to this.
And that's how Horizon got fucked last year.
Whoa!
You know? When it didn't win anything. Because I think everybody was trying to play this game, and then it got all messed up. So I just want us to keep all that stuff in mind.
Okay.
All right.
I'm with you. So Game of the Year.
Game of the Year. Recognizing a game that delivers the absolute best experience across all creative and technical fields.
Okay.
Assassin's Creed Odyssey.
Whoop!
Celeste,
woo-woo.
God of War,
woo-woo.
Spider-Man,
woo-woo.
Monster Hunter World,
woo-woo.
Red Dead Redemption
woo-woo.
2.
I got two in and I was like, oh wait, all these games are great.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. More nominees than ever before in this category.
By one.
And yet not enough. One.
And yet not enough. It has been a great year.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you guys think? Because for me, it's obvious. It's God of War.
That's what you would vote? Or is that what you're saying?
That is what
win?
I would vote. It's also what I think is going to win.
Really?
Yeah.
My prediction will be Red Dead 2. My vote, I can't make yet.
Mm.
I have been thinking about this all day, and I'm trapped between three games right now. I'm locked in a internal power struggle, and I hope it's okay that I'm not saying exactly what I think.
You're allowed to do whatever you want. No one's going to catch you. What are the three games you're locked in between?
I'm torn between Celeste, God of War, and Red Dead for me. Red Dead is a game that was made for me. Like, it's like they reached into my mind and made the video game I wanted. Celeste is a game I never knew I needed. That's one of my favorite things ever. And God of War is the greatest single player focus story of its generation.
Mm-hmm.
Andy, what would your pick be?
I think God of War is going to win, and it would also be my pick.
Excellent.
Dude, I just think it hit on every level.
God of War, to me, I keep saying this, but when Celeste happened, I was like, I can't imagine a game beating it. And then God of War happened. I'm like, it does. It just simply does. And that's crazy. But recognizing a game that delivers the absolute best experience across all creative and technical fields.
Right.
It's God of War, man.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's my thing. I've said it, you know, since finishing God of War, that God of War is my game of the year. I've said I think it might be my new favorite game of all time because I've just never had a game that is so perfect stem to stern. Imperfect, obviously, being a loose term. But I mean, what I keep saying and what I keep hanging in my hat on when I talk about this game is that there's never a wasted moment. Every moment in that game is designed to be a certain thing and do a certain thing and had me enraptured the entire time to the point that I'm on the boat and someone's telling me a story and I stop at the shore. Mm-hmm. The mission is over there. This is a story that has nothing to do with the real story. Oh, it has something tangentially to do, but not crucial information. But the story is so great and so well performed that that's what I'm going to do.
My counterpoint to that, and you're right about everything you're saying, by the way, the counter thought to that is that in something like Red Dead 2, you have, I think, the most perfectly realized junction of open world emergent storytelling and straightforward cast-based storytelling that I've ever encountered in a video game, which is a very, very different kind of game than Quarry 8, and is also equally impressive. And it's hard for me to look at those two very different creative visions, very different kinds of games, both of which succeed beyond anything I've ever seen anyone who tried to do those things do. That's really hard. And then in the middle of that, the little game of the heart, Celeste, that moved me the way few things have.
I do think that predicting the winner here, I think it's going to be a split between God of War
and
Red Dead. And I think that Celeste is going to take votes away one way or the other from those. I just think that that's going to, I think that the people that are voting for Red Dead, more of those people are going to vote for Celeste than the side of God of War, if that makes sense, in terms of like how they're splitting the vote.
Yeah, I'm not a voter, so I don't have to worry about that, and thank goodness. But
yeah, well, this is the fun part about it. I mean, we are voters for full transparency, of course. But I think that's I think Celeste was the movement to get it nominated. Cool, it's been nominated. Mm-hmm. It's recognized as Game of the Year. For real, what's Game of the Year? It's in the same way, like, you know, Kevin, you know, shouted out Odyssey. I love Odyssey, right? It's a game I can't wait to get back to right now. A fantastic game. I'm on my way to platinum, and I've beaten all the storylines of it now. Like, it's just, it can't hold a candle to God of War, I feel, in terms of just not a wasted moment.
Yeah.
And that's the thing of
Spider-Man as well for me.
You really think there's not, now there in Celeste, when it talks to not a wasted moment, I'd actually think that that accomplishes that as well as God of War does.
Interesting.
I can't think of a moment in Celeste.
No, you're right. No, and I love how fast it is to restart levels in
Absolutely.
Celeste.
But it's what you were saying of like, okay, it got nominated, but like, let's really.
But I think that's what I'm hanging my hat on, but I think it's also then the story of God of War, the technical prowess of God of War, the acting of God of War. Like, there's more I can add on to the cake to tell you why, but I think it's most stunning achievement is the fact that I think it's just so tight.
God of War is Harry Chapin the video game, and that's hard to fight with.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is.
So yeah, it's going to be interesting. In terms of a prediction, right? Like, I think I'm saying I would vote God of War. In terms of a prediction, though, if it can beat Red Dead is a big question, and it's going to be interesting. I don't know, because it is that thing of putting on your reviewer's hat or whatever you want to do it, like. Sure, like, you know, a lot of people Red Dead didn't click with, or they thought it started slow, or they don't like the, like, there's, I feel like, more criticisms lobbed at a game that's trying to be, as we keep saying, right, something very definitive. It's making decided choices there to be a very specific kind of game, which, even as someone who didn't want to finish it, I respect the hell out
right,
of. Yeah. And I see people like Rami Ismail, right, tweeting about, like, I can't get over this game. I don't enjoy it, but I can't get over what they're doing with it. Like, you know, he sees it for what it is, as a work of art.
Yeah.
And I think there's a big part of that that will come down of, cool, we all loved God of War and it changed this, but then Red Dead is doing something we haven't seen before. And even if it didn't click with you, how much does that matter when you vote?
Both of these games changed the state of the art in vastly different ways. And that's the hard part of it. But Red Dead, I do think, is a bona fide masterwork of the generation, and it'll be hard for it not to win.
We all worked at IGN.
Yeah.
We all know how they review games. All three, Celeste, Red Dead, and God of War, all got 10s.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I didn't know God of War got a 10.
Yep. Got a 10 from IGN.
Nice.
And those are rare.
They are.
And they're more
not
rare.
Not this year.
But not this year.
Well, this year's been crazy.
I'm fucking
right. What a weird name.
It's, and Undertale as well. They're,
it's
like
the Paul Hollywood handshake.
Yeah, well, Undertale was last year they gave it that, I think, or 2 years ago, actually.
I get it. Well, Undertale... Yeah, I guess now on console.
Yeah, yeah, that cool. was an older. But yeah, they gave those 310s this year, and those are my three favorite. Although the Messenger's way up there for me. Florence is
you'll get your,
for me.
Oh, you'll we'll get your chance for all this. Yeah. So let's settle down, Jared.
Best ongoing game. Awarded to a game for outstanding development of ongoing content that evolves the player experience over time. Mm-hmm. Destiny 2 Forsaken, Fortnite, No Man's Sky, Overwatch, Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six Siege.
I mean, is there any way Fortnite doesn't win this?
I don't think so. I think Fortnite wins for sure.
Yeah, same.
I don't really have
a horse in the race.
Yeah, I would rather play No Man's Sky than any of these.
Here's my thing, right? I think it's Fortnite, and I would vote Fortnite on this topic. Destiny 2 Forsaken, right? Hey, man, they listened to the community at launch, and they built something that's great, right? I think that you can't negate the packs that came before that were like, hey, we're working on what you want, but this is what we can do right now. Great that they got it to Forsaken. I know that like Fran and so many people are in love with it. I just think, not that it's too little too late, but it doesn't stack up to Fortnite week after week, month after month, season after season, coming out and literally changing the game and making these giant events and doing all these different things.
And actually, I disagree with that. I think it is too little too late on Destiny 2. I really do.
Well, technically, when you spell it out, what I just said, it is. I'm not saying in terms of getting a fan base excited or being there, but in terms of the award, right? Yeah. And the same thing with No Man's Sky. No Man's Sky, what a redemption tale. I'm so happy for them that they did this. They turned this around and got to this point. But again, it was getting to this point.
Exactly.
You had a great drop, and that's awesome.
I think that may be like the most competitive field, I think, where like every game in that category is doing incredible things and releasing new content and new characters to play as. I think Overwatch does a great job of getting hype for new characters and releasing new worlds to or new levels to play in. Mm-hmm. But Fortnite just, you know, brought it up to 11. Absolutely. In terms of their the meteorite crashing, and then the this new thing that happened recently where suddenly
you get
warped to a different dimension and there's a white butterfly, and then suddenly the whole world changes. I think it's like they are doing what everybody else did, and with just a little bit more resources, it feels.
And let's not forget that they're taking a step beyond every other competitor on here by saying, oh, and by the way, we're putting on everything on the planet Earth this year. It all works with each other instantly. You can play it on a phone. You can play it on a PS4.
That's a fantastic point,
and
actually.
And it's free. So, you know what?
Outside of the content itself, it's the way they're pushing the industry. You're
they're right. Just 100%. Like, they are pushing. Fortnite deserves 1,000 votes in this category.
Mm-hmm. Kevin?
Yeah?
Write to Jeff Keighley and give Fortnite 1,000 votes.
1,000 votes for Fortnite?
1,000 votes for Fortnite? Yeah.
Best game direction awarded to a game studio for outstanding creative vision and innovation in game design and direction.
This is fucking torture.
Yeah,
I get it. A Way Out. Detroit Become Human. Mario. God of War. Marvel Spider-Man. Red Dead Redemption 2.
Yeah. Red Dead Redemption 2's director is halfway them and halfway you. That's the creative vision on their end. Half of that game is the parts they're taking you through, and the other half is what you end up creating for yourself in that amazing cinematic mode, in the way you engage the world. So you are given great license to be a director in Red Dead. On the other hand, what Corey did with God of War is an incredible, focused, creative vision. And yet again, we have two of the most perfectly realized creative vision side by side.
But here's my thing. Can you read the description again?
Man, Spider-Man's going to be Horizon this year, huh?
Awarded to a game studio for outstanding creative vision and innovation in game direction and design.
Yeah. I mean, what you just described to me is Red Dead Redemption 2.
Yeah.
God of War is my game of the year. Maybe I'm a favorite game of all time. Red Dead is what encapsulates that statement to me in terms of like, hey, again, it's a work of art. You may love it, you may hate it. It's going to make you feel something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I predict Red Dead's going to win.
Uh-huh.
To me, it's God of War. And the reason for that is in game direction and design, the way that game is designed, the fact that the camera doesn't cut, that
great point.
Changes video games to me. That changes. No longer does a cinematic experience need to be a cinematic. It is something that you get to play through and seamlessly between cutscenes and gameplay and all of that. So for game direction, in addition to an amazing story, the amazing direction of acting and all of that, that would be mine. But I predict Red Dead.
And yet in Red Dead 2, which I don't think you've played much of, right?
Mm-mm.
That ability is dynamically built in as well in a very strange way. And that's the other end of it is that they haven't hyped this as much, but any, there's not that many cutscenes in Red Dead. Mm-hmm. And yet there's a ton of conversation and you're in control of how that's unfolding. It's very strange. And they give you the ability to cinematize it and they have like pre-baked camera angles for things in the woods and for, it's weird and wonderful. See,
but my thing is it's not that just making it cinematic, is the fact that it's all one take. There's something
That's powerful.
That feels beautifully real about it all just being one smooth
tip, it's like this incredible like Paul Thomas Anderson like moment.
Can you
happening?
Slack me what you're reading that has the descriptions on it? You know what I mean?
Yep.
That way I can have it open too.
It's thegameawards.com/awards.
Excuse me, I said slack it to
I'm
me.
I'm trying to
Andy,
do that.
What is your pick?
I can do it.
What happened to your neck, first of all?
I went to say, I was like, Andy, what's your pick? And then I got hung up and I was like, oh, and then I went back and my neck like jammed. You ever get like a neck pain?
Yeah.
One of them neck pains.
I think the voters will split the vote here, where whatever wins game of the year will win or will not win this award. You know what I mean? I do think they'll try to split it up that way. So I'd vote for Red Dead Redemption. But I do agree with Tim about the no cutting camera. It's like revolutionary. It never felt like you were, all right, time to play, time to watch, time to play, time to watch. Yeah. It's just, it was always sort of around you, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you on it, and I don't, again, I love God of War, I don't need to sit here, but I just feel like awarded to a game studio for outstanding creative vision and innovation in game direction and design. I think, I just feel like direction and design is Red Dead.
I predict that Red Dead will win both Game of the Year and Best Game Direction.
I think with all NPCs, you know, the interacting, I think all that stuff sort of goes into...
What they're talking about here.
Sort of like innovative design, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Best narrative for outstanding storytelling and narrative development in a game.
Oh, jeez, not again.
Detroit Become Human, God of War, Life is Strange 2, Episode 1, Spider-Man, Red Dead Redemption 2.
Florence should be on this list. Florence should be on this list.
My vote goes to God of War.
God.
All right. I predict God of War.
Mm-hmm.
I almost want my vote to go to Spider-Man.
Wow.
I feel like Spider-Man told such a great Spider-Man story.
It did. Mm-hmm. That's not, yes, you're not wrong.
And it's like, that is such an accomplishment because it could have been totally phoned in. And it should have been. Like, they could have took the easy way out.
Sonic would never do that.
And they didn't. They really gave us a great Spider-Man story. At the end of the day, it didn't have as many twists and turns as it could have. But to be fair, neither did God of War. It has a couple big moments, but so does Spider-Man.
But narrative is more than twists and turns, right?
Yeah. It is.
If you put a gun to my head, I'm going to say Red Dead 2 is my choice because of the open world storytelling and how ridiculously difficult that is to do with a very laid out story and how well that progresses itself. But I think the winner in the category will end up being God of War.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the winner is, I predict God of War, but for me, Spider-Man, it just... Narrative also includes not just twists and turns, but it's the world. And to be, hey, this is a Spider-Man 8 years in the making, and we're going to reveal that world to you, reveal your relationship with Mary Jane and Otto Octavius and like all the Norman Osborn, like all these characters, you know, like that is, it was such a refreshing take for me. And I thought they did such a great job.
I vote and predict God of War.
Best art direction. For outstanding creative and or technical achievement in artistic design and animation. Assassin's Creed Odyssey, God of War, Octopath Traveler, Red Dead Redemption 2, Return of the Obra Dinn.
Well, this one's fun.
Best art direction.
I think that one's probably going to go again. That's going to be Red Dead for me. Because that, I mean, the snow melt on the rocks, I think that's where it finally got me. It's just like, wow, this sure does look like the world. Yeah. And the fact that I travel 100 yards in any direction and the terrain changes and the colors still pop and it's completely different plants and completely different animals and completely different terrain and it's still beautiful and it just sort of flows into each other for miles in every direction. That's probably going to be it for me. Also, the people look great.
Has anybody played Obra Dinn?
Mm-mm.
No. Me neither.
It looks dope as fuck. We watched a trailer of it.
That's a Beatles song, right? Obra Dinn, Obra Dinn, life goes on.
That's exactly what it is, Jerry.
I'd vote for God of War only because of the variety and worlds that you're in. And how different.
And the camera thing, again, this fits there, right?
True.
God, this one, this is hard.
Yeah.
Especially because I want to give a shout out to Octopath Traveler. That game, the moment everyone saw it, it was just like, holy shit, this is doing something so different. And it's beautiful. It is like revolutionizing what a 2D JRPG can look like, you know? I don't think it's going to win.
I do think another thing that gives it a God of War for me is, I mean, it's art direction, so it's like animation and stuff like mm-hmm. that. Yeah, I do think the variety of combat in God of War, mm-hmm. You know, comboing with different enemies and throwing them up into the air. You know, I think that I'm surprised. Is Spider-Man there?
No.
Wow. Spider-Man was great animation.
Red Dead had me, I think, the first time a really horrible thunderstorm rolled through and then the clouds started to break. Like that effect. I have you been through a Red Dead thunderstorm, Andy? You know, it's just like.
I haven't been in one. I've been in rain.
It's unreal.
I saw a clip of a guy getting struck by lightning.
Yeah.
And his character died, you know, Arthur died.
No, it's one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen in a game.
I predict Red Dead.
Yeah, I did too.
Is that what you would vote to?
I would vote
are
either
you abstaining.
I would vote either God of War or Octopath Traveler.
Mm. Yeah, I think I would. I predict and vote Red Dead.
Well, that's one of my favorite categories.
I predict and vote God of War.
Yeah. I think it's a good point you're making about the animation.
Yeah.
Best score / music presented by Spotify.
But I mean, like, nothing. Really I think it's just, you know, for outstanding creative and or technical achievement, artistic design and animation, right? Like, I think technical achievement is where Red Dead, I think, for me, surges ahead in terms of why I'm there and because of the tech of that world, the dynamic thunderstorms. I'm not even making a joke. The horse testicles, right? Like a detail that's a visual artistic thing to that level, right? That then moves out. And then the way clothes
God rays. The God rays in fucking.
Oh, yeah.
Like coming through the trees. Just every time you see that, it's like, oh, let me take a screenshot, you know?
Best score / music presented by Spotify.
Spotify!
For outstanding music inclusive of score, original song, and / or licensed soundtrack.
Yeah.
Celeste, God of War, Spider-Man, Ni No Kuni 2, Octopath Traveler, Red Dead 2.
I'm going to say Celeste because it's extremely difficult to write a memorable soundtrack about in a game that you die 100 times on the same screen that you don't get tired of the music. Mm-hmm. You're just playing that same stage over and over and over and over and over and over with the same music, and you don't get tired of hearing it.
Instead, is that your prediction or your vote?
That is my vote. My prediction is Red Dead Redemption, which has a kind of bodacious soundtrack.
Man, this one's real hard for me.
I think my vote's going to be for Celeste, but I think Red Dead will win, and I think it'll win for reasons why I don't love the soundtrack. Is it at times they will introduce songs with vocals, and not all of them I dig. Mm. And I think it seems kind of cheesy and corny sometimes, and that kind of just turns me off.
That's a spoiler moment for me. But
yeah,
the last thing I expected was that sudden optimistic musical turn that takes place at one point.
For me, I predict it's going to be Celeste. I personally would vote Octopath Traveler. Because Octopath Traveler is the first game in a long time where I like the music so much that I'd be playing it on planes, and I'm like, I need to take a nap.
It brings the heat.
Hard save, and then just leave it on the menu and sit there listening to it.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Octopath Traveler has great music.
Yeah. I think this is a chance to... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go for it.
No, I think this is a chance where, in terms of predictions, where I think Celeste is going to get the votes.
I also feel like it's wrong that The Messenger is not nominated for this.
Well, you can take it up with the judging advisory board.
Messenger does have a dope soundtrack.
Messenger has a great soundtrack.
My thing is, I love Celeste's soundtrack so much, but even then, and at God of War, I feel like it has a great theme that fit the game very well, but it's not super memorable, and I don't think it did anything extremely unique. Spider-Man is where I would put my vote, probably.
Spider-Man swells, right? Like, that was the thing of swinging through. We talked about this all the time. You get off a call, you jump off a building, the music would go, it swells, you crest it over the thing.
And I just feel like the music was built into the gameplay, and like that is an achievement, but this doesn't mention anything about achievement.
I'm looking at the voting here, and I think you are right about Spider-Man is going to end up being like the most 8 game possible in a year of 9s in terms of a lot of this voting categorized.
I would vote for Spider-Man. I predict.
What do you predict him?
It's between Celeste and Red Dead. I'm going to give it to Celeste.
Okay.
Best audio design, ooh, presented by Dolby. Dolby. Recognize the best in-game audio and sound design. Call of Duty Black Ops 4, Forza Horizon 4, God of War, Spider-Man, Red Dead Redemption 2.
Man, this is Spider-Man or Red Dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The different soundtracks for Peter Parker having effort sounds, mm-hmm, when swinging and stuff, I think is really cool. But they do that in Red Dead as well, where, yeah, when an NPC gets far away, your character starts shouting his lines.
Yeah.
And I think that's really cool. But I do think I think it'll go to Red Dead Redemption only because of all of the... I remember Jared talking about this on a prior games cast where every place in the, yeah, world has its own vibe and its own sound palette.
Yep.
Every city sounds different. The swamps, the towns, the plains.
Yeah, I really believe at this point I could close my eyes, you could put earphones on me, and I could tell you where we were in the world.
Yeah.
Like it's
Games Cast Games Game.
Oh, man.
So that's my pick and prediction.
I'd vote for Spider-Man based on everything I just said, but I predict Red Dead.
So wait, Andy, what did you vote and predict?
I vote and predict Red Dead Redemption 2.
Okay.
But what about Boy? What about that?
That was great, but
that brings us into best performance.
Oh, nice segue.
Awarded to an individual for voiceover acting, motion and/or performance capture. Brian Deckert as Connor, Detroit Become Human. Christopher Judge as Kratos, God of War.
Boy. My name
is
Connor.
Not what I imagined him looking like.
It's my impersonation of him.
Hank, I don't understand why you're doing this.
Melisanthi Mahout as Cassandra, Assassin's Creed Odyssey. Roger Clark as Arthur Morgan, Red Dead 2. Yuri Lowenthal as Peter Parker, Marvel Spider-Man.
Gotcha, Yuri.
Ah, man.
That's my Yuri Lowenthal impersonation.
It's good.
Obviously, these are all superb. But I fell in love with Arthur, and a lot of it was that voice. And especially the fact that, for reasons we don't want to spoil, that voice changes so much over the course of the game and is still Arthur.
Gets kicked in the balls once.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's the dynamism that he has to go through in that role, that makes it a truly great performance.
Is that who you're predicting too?
Yeah, I predict Hillwin for that precise reason.
Sure. I would like Yuri Lowenthal to win it, but I think it's going to go to the person who voices Arthur. Who voices Arthur? I forgot.
Roger Clark.
I think it'll go to Roger Clark, but my vote goes to Yuri Lowenthal.
Honestly, I think this is the most competitive category we've had so far.
Yeah.
In terms of just like every one of these people I could see winning because they're all amazing and they all did his stuff.
Christopher Judge made me cry so many times.
Oh, same.
Right? Yeah. And I mean, that's the thing. You know, do you want to talk about Christopher Judge coming in and breathing life and depth into a character that up until this point has had none, mm-hmm, and making me care about Kratos after years of shit talking Kratos and giving him a range and giving, yeah, him a performance, right? And that's the thing is I like it's best for performance. It's not best VO.
Yeah.
And that's so much of that is communicated through not touching him, right? Shying away. The fucking line of I know where there's such a weapon, right? And like going out and arguing.
I just got goosebumps right there. Yeah,
it's one of those things. Cassandra is one of my favorite video game characters of all time. But I think in terms of a performance, you stack that up against Kratos, and I think I would vote Christopher Judge, mm-hmm, just in terms of what he did there. Again, though, this sucks because Yuri was amazing. Arthur is amazing. Brian is amazing. Like, all these people are fucking incredible, but
you spent so much time with Cassandra. I mean, she's been your...
Yeah.
I just think Yuri brought so much joy, yeah, to gameplay experience.
The thing I go back to all the time is, like, I've been lucky enough to know Yuri a while. And, like, I don't... And I'm not trying to insult anybody, but, like, when I play a game and Nolan pops up, oh, I'm like, oh, it's Nolan. You know what I mean? I'm like, when I'm playing Spider-Man, that is Peter Parker. I do not hear Yuri's voice. I do not hear Yuri in that.
And that's why I would vote for Yuri, because...
Fuck, you're turning me around.
He's crying.
He reinvented Peter Parker. He was Peter Parker to me. And yeah, like that's something that we already are familiar with Peter Parkers. For him to be this new Peter Parker
and not feel weird.
It's that's like, a great fucking point.
I just feel like as cool as his performance is, what's demanded of Clark in that role is significantly more difficult. He's so much range over such a relatively medium length campaign, and yet he's forced to alter himself on several occasions radically and always still sound like the same guy, and it's shocking how well he does it.
I predict Christopher Judge though.
Yeah, do you?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Clark
Yuri Lowenthal's crying scene though got me real good.
It was good.
Real good, guys.
I changed my vote to Yuri. You raised a great point.
Vote or prediction?
Vote. I never predicted anything.
I'll give them all awards, though.
Thank you, Andy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Make some Andy awards.
We love that. Andy's. Yeah. Can I have an Andy?
You can have one, sure.
Thank you.
I'll give one to myself, too, because I think I did a great job this year just doing voices.
You're a good
Andy.
You
did a great year.
You're always good
at impressions. I'll predict Kratos.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would vote Yuri.
Good calls, Greg. Good calls.
That's what I do.
Christopher Judge is a cool name, by the way. Can we just talk about that?
Games for Impact.
Can we define this?
He's about to.
I said, can we define this?
He cut you off.
Can we define this? I said, can we find
this? No, can you define
this? I don't know. Games for Impact. For a thought-provoking game with a profound pro-social meaning or message.
The Lawrence!
1111, Memories Retold. Celeste. Florence. Life is Strange 2, Episode 1. The Missing. J.J. Macfield and the Island of Memories.
I vote for Florence. I think Celeste wins.
Ooh.
I vote and predict Celeste.
I only played Celeste out of this list, so that they get both of mine.
Florence is fantastic.
Or I loved it.
Great, great experience. Super worth playing for everybody. Celeste changed the damn game when it comes to this stuff. When you're talking about profound pro-social meaning or message, like that is pro something. Florence was just a fun narrative. I actually would prefer that narrative than
I feel like category. Florence, I think Celeste obviously does it with there's more involvement in the parallels of the story and the difficulty of the experience. But Florence in many ways encapsulated the same kind of mechanical storytelling bridge that Celeste pulls off, and it did it in a 45-minute experience that's extremely accessible, whereupon many people never even reach that point in Celeste.
And ding, 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 that's the problem. In terms of making a prediction, right, for who's going to win, how many people are voting, and I would, and I don't know how many, you know, whatever, but in terms of made it to the jump in Celeste, right, it's similar to The Messenger, where I did, and I guess I didn't, no, it's similar to Messenger, where I know there's this thing goes off in a different direction, but I never made it there. I'm sure a lot of people played that game and didn't make it there to where the story goes in a different direction.
I would argue two levels of Celeste is.
And that's why I cut myself off. Like, I've been there. Yeah. Like, I know what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, even one level is, I would say. Like, once, if you get to the end of the first stage of Celeste, it still, I think, has more of a profound social meaning or message than Florence does. And I loved Florence.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, to me, Florence is a story about a relationship.
What do you got against relationships, Tim?
Nothing. I just think that Celeste, like.
No, I mean, Celeste is.
You've had a chance to play this and you haven't go play Celeste and pause right now, but what is the pro-social message of Celeste?
It is being able to look into yourself and try to find the light that's still there when you're depressed, when you're dealing with anxiety.
Right.
And I feel like when you add that to gameplay, that's what makes Celeste special to me, is the story is deep and meaningful, but every single thing about it is tied to actual gameplay that is tight 2D platforming at its best.
Okay, now you've got something here. There's the Greek word hamartia is used in scripture. It means sin, but it literally means missing the mark. Like you're shooting an arrow and you miss the bullseye. Mm-hmm. It's the same word that actually appears as sin in the Bible. I think that Celeste is an expression of that. It's like every time I miss the mark, I feel shamed. Every time I miss the mark, I'm not making it, but I keep going. Her self-loathing is... change my vote.
Me too.
You did it. He's right.
He heard a great thing. I was so excited to see Florence. I got distracted, but you're right. Yeah, what is the pro meaning?
You're right.
The pro meaning of Florence is relationships end sometimes and you'll be okay, which you're is a good message, great but message. Like not the same message.
Yeah.
No, you're right. It's transcendental.
You should play Florence, Andy. It's
an iOS game, right?
45-minute iOS game.
I don't have an iOS device.
I think it might
Android
be
too.
It's a phone.
Android 2.
But I think it's on Switch now, or does it just get announced for Switch?
Oh, really?
I didn't hear
it. Maybe I made it. Hold on, everybody.
Yeah, it's absolutely worth playing.
Yep.
It's like really short, too, right?
45 minutes.
Yeah.
Thank you for swaying me, Tim.
Yeah.
With your good
points. I'm a swayer, dude. Great game stuff.
It is on Android.
Is it out? Oh, no.
Yeah, it's on Android, because that's where I played it.
Best independent game.
Oh, Lord. Before we read the nominees.
Messenger, baby.
That's Messenger, right. Man. That's Messenger.
Best independent game for outstanding creative and technical achievements in a game made outside the traditional publisher system.
Okay, first off, Minute should be on here. That game, you talk about outstanding creative technical achievement, freaking amazing.
You ever beat it?
Oh, yeah, Minute. It takes like 2 hours.
Celeste, he had you
120 minutes.
Huh? Yeah. Oh, nice. Well done.
Celeste. Dead
Looks
cells.
Like I was wrong about Florence on Switch. I'm confused. My apologies.
Celeste. Dead Cells. Into the Breach. Return of the Oberdeen. The Messenger.
Okay, so Celeste, amazing. Into the Breach, we never gave the love it really deserved here. That's true. That game's unreal. Yeah. Like that is just about the perfect strategy video game. It's incredible.
Those are games that just do not vibe with me, which is why I never ever gave it a shot.
Yeah, it's so minimal. Like it's like Chrono Trigger. It strips all the crap out you hate and just leaves the absolute bare minimum that you need to get what's fun about those games and takes everything else out.
When I saw like graphics of like, oh, it's a mecha game, holy shit, let me get to it. And it's like strategy sort of turn-based. I was like, never mind, I'm good.
Did you even try it?
I didn't try it.
Andy,
I can't do those games.
It's different than those. Try once. I'll buy you a copy.
Do or do not. There is no try.
Yeah, give it a shot. I'm sorry, I got
Celeste across the board for me. Vote for Celeste, and I predict Celeste. My thing is, so many of these games I love and enjoy so much. Dead Cells, if it was tighter, if it wasn't a 25-hour game and instead was a 10-hour game, there'd be a question. Actually, even that's hard because Celeste is fucking so damn good. But shout out to Dead Cells and shout out to The Messenger. I had such a great time with The Messenger. I love The Messenger. I just feel it does so much perfectly that when it does some things okay, I'm like, I wanted a little bit more.
Okay.
The big twist in the game, I don't like it.
Oh, see, I love it. I think the why I would vote The Messenger over Celeste is I just had more joy playing it. Whether it's the platforming, the writing is hilarious.
It is.
And I enjoyed the writing more than Celeste. Now, Celeste is obviously a more serious game. It's supposed to make you feel more things. But that's not the type of game that I would necessarily enjoy. The humor, the same reason, sort of like going back to MCU and review, why I have Ragnarok over Infinity War. Like I loved the jokes and the goofs in Messenger. I love the self-awareness.
The guffaws.
But also on top of that, if the gameplay wasn't good, then, you know, what do you really have? But I thought the gameplay was incredible, along with sort of that open world thing that sort of twists and turns. And I think it's just great. I love The Messenger.
I'm abstaining from voting. I didn't beat enough of these games. I mean, I've played a lot of them. I've played Celeste. I've played some Dead Cells. I've played The Messenger. None of those games I finished. My wife did brand management for The Messenger, so obviously I don't feel ready to say anything about that. But, like, Messenger I played, I was like, I get it, and stopped playing. Celeste, I played for a long time, I really enjoyed, and then something came out and distracted me, and I never went back. Dead Cells, I played a few rounds of, and I was like, I get it, cool. And then, yeah, Into the Breach didn't seem like my type of game. And anyways, predicting, though, as I'd predict Celeste.
I could see you getting sucked into Into the Breach, by the way.
Yeah.
I guess it's just been a while since I've played a 2D platformer and had so many moments where, like, holy shit, whoa.
And this is Celeste?
It's a Messenger.
Okay.
Either Celeste was just kind of like a gradual thing, and Dead Cells, on the other hand, while I love the hook, again, I agree with Tim, it's like, shorten it, keep it tighter. I felt more frustrated playing it. And it could be just a get good thing or whatever, but...
Are you predicting Messenger as well?
I am predicting Celeste, but I vote for the Messenger.
Gotcha. Jared, what were your predictions and votes?
As much as I love the Messenger, it's on my all-time favorites list now, I think. I both have to choose and predict Celeste. Celeste is deeply impacting at a level that I think that transcends just a game. Mm-hmm. It's art in a very beautiful way. Also, how in the world is Bloodstained not on here? How's that?
Because it's not the real one. The real one didn't come out.
The fake one is
Inti Creates one where Matt worked all on it.
Yeah, that quote unquote fake Bloodstained game is amazing. Well, that's a great game.
Let me call up Jeff Keighley. Ring a ding ding.
But yeah,
I also think that Celeste is a shoe in here because it got nominated for Game of the Year. And with all due respect, it's not going to win Game of the Year. Or will it? We'll see.
No, the
biggest upset of all time. Fucking Corey Barlog walks over and punches fucking Dan Houser in the face. And then everybody's like, what's happening?
Best mobile game. For the best game playable on a dedicated mobile device.
Lawrence!
things get interesting here. Donut County.
Great game.
Florence. Great game.
Yep.
Fantastic.
Fortnite.
Mm-hmm.
Good game.
PUBG Mobile, mm-hmm. Reigns, Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm. Where is Part-Time UFO? Where is Part-Time UFO? Where is Part-Time UFO?
I am voting and predicting Florence.
Wow.
I have no vote.
I am voting and predicting Florence.
Yeah, that's my man.
I am voting Florence. I am predicting Fortnite.
Damn.
And honestly, I mean, here's the thing, dude. Yeah. Argument to be made. I said this on Games Daily a couple days ago. Fortnite is a fucking accomplishment on mobile.
Yes. Oh my God, no, I'm not taking away from it. I will never
forget being on Gamescast and you guys pulling it out and me seeing it and being like, this is the game.
Game changer.
The concessions made are graphical. They're not gameplay. They're not what the game is. The full fucking Fortnite game is playable there.
What's really impressive is watching really good players play Fortnite Mobile.
Yeah.
And it's just it like there's that audience where you wonder, like, where are the hardcores for these games? Like, is there a hardcore dedicated audience that plays this over console or over PC? And they exist. And it's really fucking impressive. It's really cool to see how that Fortnite Mobile and even PUBG Mobile, too, mm-hmm. has sort of like garnered its own little fan base. And it has super hardcore people playing it.
My favorite thing about Fortnite Mobile is that it puts good games in the hands of kids. Again, I like that. I like when it makes more kids able to play good games together. And I think that's great.
I think that I agree that. Don't get me wrong. I just feel like this is going to get one in, like, everybody's going to kind of give, like, the eye roll.
Yep.
I'm like, Fortnite, yes, it is on mobile. One. It plays on mobile. It's not a mobile game. You know what I mean? It's Florence. That's a mobile game.
That's fair. And you're right. There's going to be a lot of people that don't vote for Fortnite just because of that. But this is another weird one where I even would predict Donut County potentially over Florence because I feel like more people played it. Because if we're talking about votes, it's a numbers game.
I feel like a lot of people will get their survey, figure out that Florence is 45 minutes long, and play it before they vote.
Donut County is super short, too, though.
Yeah, that's true. Donut County is. Donut County is amazing.
Yeah, no, I love Donut County. Have a garbage day.
Yeah, have a garbage day indeed.
But I just, yeah, I think this is where so you're going to give the nods to Florence.
Game that
maybe get out, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Also, seriously, it's just a crime that Part-Time UFO is not on here.
Best VR / AR game for the best game experience playable in virtual or augmented reality.
What a fucking category, PlayStation VR fans. It's our year.
Astrobot Rescue Mission.
Whoop, whoop.
Beat Saber.
Fuck yeah. Yeah.
Firewall 0 Hour.
Ooh-wee.
Moss.
My man.
Tetris Effect.
Let's go. Ooh, woo, woo, woo. Yeah.
Dude,
I love you.
Can't go wrong. You can't go wrong here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's what I want y'all to do. Trade in your PlayStation 4 and buy a PlayStation VR. Because these are the games.
Dude,
you
I
want to
play Astrobot now. After seeing all these reviews.
Dude, Astrobot's so much fun.
People talk about Astrobot as if it's like one of the best platformers like ever.
And they ain't wrong. You need to play it, Tim.
I need to play it. All these games are not all of them. So many of them are so up my alley. I need to play Tetris Effect.
Okay, you do.
Yeah, I feel like there's going to be a recency bias thing with votes for this. And I think that Tetris Effect...
I agree.
You said there's going to be a Regency bias?
Recency.
Oh, okay.
Bias.
I mean, Astrobot was right there.
Yeah.
Here's what I'm going to say. If you don't mind me taking the pulpit for a second. I think Tetris Effect is going to win.
Mm-hmm.
It has such a groundswell movement behind it. The only thing that might hurt it is I imagine most people are playing it not in VR. The people who do play in VR know what's the thing, but they're just excited to see Tetris Effect on the ballot, right?
Yeah.
I wouldn't give it to Beat Saber. I wouldn't give it to Beat Saber, which I love and can't wait for on PlayStation VR. But it's right now out on regular VR and has a whole store full of awesome songs to download. I think the fact that it's there, it's not on the most popular VR right now. Is it going to hurt it in terms of? Oh, I've seen it. It's cool. It's lightsabers. I personally don't even know all about the downloadable songs and all the stuff you can get and all the mod community and all the jazz and the Darth Maul. You know, there's so many cool things happening with it. Firewall 0 Hour. So great, right, Kev?
Yeah.
I mean, you want to talk about really like, holy shit, I'm playing it with works. 7 other people and it's all working and it's all fantastic. It's great. It's still not light years above it. Moss is a game that I love and got super overlooked. Everybody who's like in love with Astrobot, which again is a fantastic game, needs to fucking play Moss, which is also now out, it debuted on PSVR and now out on everything else.
That little mouse is so cute.
Quill, amazing character. But I think Tetris Effect is what takes it. And honestly, it's tough. This is really where it gets in the head of like what I would vote for versus what do I think would win versus what is my favorite. Like that's so fucking tough right there. But I'd probably end up giving it to Tetris Effect too.
I would rather play Tetris Effect than Astrobot, but Astrobot is probably the greater achievement for the art form this year. Somebody managed to break through and make us go, oh, wow, look what VR can do.
And that's the thing, and that's maybe what'll hold back Tetris Effect is it's fucking insane and amazing, and there's all this hyperbole on it about, like, can Tetris win Game of the Year? And it's like, well, yeah, but it is just Tetris. Now, granted, Tetris is one of the greatest games of all time.
I think Tetris Effect wins it. I think you... narrowly, I think I'm probably going to say Astrobot edges it out for me, even though I'm more likely to play Tetris Effect. Like, that's the game I'm going to go home and play.
Yeah, yeah.
But Astrobot may very well be the greater achievement of the two.
Tim, what are you voting for? Or what are you abstaining, but what are you predicting?
I'm abstaining. I haven't played enough of these. I will say, though, Beat Saber is, it's old. That's the problem it has going for it. Because Beat Saber is one of those games where, like, anytime... even whether or not you know and have played with VR or anything, those videos go viral of people being like, what the fuck is this game? It looks awesome. It's definitely one of my games of the year from what I've played. Mm. It is fantastic. It's such a great time. And it shows how cool VR can be. It kind of is the promise of VR achieved.
It's the sort of Wii Sports thing where you show your... when you got your Wii and you just had people come over and play Mario Tennis. Like, if you have... a Vive or an Oculus, it's like, come look at this game that is available.
It's everything fucking cool.
Yeah. Kevin, I'd like your input. This is a category built for you as well. As the VR Kevin boys, we call each other.
Producer. I feel like he's walking upstairs.
I feel like Firewall was like the biggest surprise. I think Tetris will win.
Okay.
And I even think it deserves it because it's great. It's a phenomenal thing, but I love Tetris. And that just
transports you to another world.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. That really takes you. But Firewall works so well. Firewall is like the promise of, like, hey, these people are figuring it out.
Yeah.
And you guys are going to have games.
What's going to hurt Firewall is just not enough people playing it.
Yeah.
You know? I think Tetris is so much more accessible.
Yeah. I predict Astrobot wins.
Oh!
And I'm saying that because I think that the vote's going to be split between Astrobot, Beat Saber, and Tetris Effect. And I think that Beat Saber and Tetris Effect are going to pull from each other.
It's brave.
And I think that people are going to rally and fight for and try to push Astrobot.
Okay.
Nice.
Best action game. For the best game in the action genre focused on combat: Call of Duty Black Ops 4, Dead Cells, Destiny 2 Forsaken, Far Cry 5, Mega Man 11.
Speaking of...
where the fuck is God of War?
Yeah, where is God of War?
Action Adventure. It's the next category.
Okay, cool. Okay.
So where is The Messenger?
Dead.
Yeah, and where again is Bloodstained?
Again, it's not out yet.
No, the one that already came
out. Yet.
The one that already came out.
Again, Real Ghostbusters.
Can you read them again to me, Tim? Sorry about that.
Call of Duty Black Ops 4, Dead Cells, Destiny 2 Forsaken, Far Cry 5, Mega Man 11.
I don't know.
I don't fucking know.
I'd say probably Call of Duty 4 Black Ops because it brought... You're getting a really good battle royale experience when people feel like they may have been burned by PUBG on console. You're getting that, and it runs super well. Well, not for us yesterday, but I don't really know.
That wasn't on. Yeah. That's not on the game.
Yeah, I think the game works incredibly well, and the fact that most consoles have that experience now that isn't Fortnite, that is a more sort of serious shooter, even though there's perks and zombies or whatever. I'd give it a Black Ops.
I think for me on this one, I would vote for Mega Man 11. And I think Dead Cells will win because it's Critical Darling and this is the place people are going to get a chance to vote for.
That's a good point, yeah. I think
I predict Dead Cells. I also vote Dead Cells, but that's because I like that game. But
yeah, Dead Cells had that sort of a little wave of craziness where everybody was tweeting about it and it was sort of, how far have you gotten?
Yeah. But I think people missed out on Mega Man 11, which is a superb action game.
I didn't try. I need to. I love Mega Man.
It's really, really good.
You didn't need to because you love Mega Man?
I really need to.
No, I really need to.
Okay. I mean...
yeah. What do you think, Big Greg?
I don't feel like I'm versed enough. I haven't played Forsaken. I didn't play Mega Man 11. Far Cry 5, I didn't enjoy. I think that's just down here because they needed to fill out the categories. Let me take that back. I enjoyed Far Cry 5, but not enough that I would have ever put it on an nominee list for anything.
Damn, that was this year?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
That was the beginning. Not even the beats.
Shit.
Man, you make a good case for Dead Cells, I guess. Can you just read the description again for action game for me?
Game in the action genre focused on combat.
That's Mega Man.
You know, I'm gonna predict Call of Duty.
I think it's a safe prediction. I think it's between that and Dead Cells. It just depends on
I do think that people will want to reward Destiny for doing the right thing and listening to the fans. Mm. And I loved what I played of Destiny 2. I played the main story, and I didn't do a lot of like post game like I didn't do the raid or anything. But I think everything in the main campaign was super well done and fun, and had the same hooks that we were all used to.
In the same vein, though, do you think they're going to want to reward Call of Duty? People love Blackout, right? That seems like it's super popular, and they're happy with zombies. Like Call of Duty is one of those ones people are like, what the fuck? And then they play it and like, oh, actually everyone's into it. It seems and it's sold really, really well, obviously.
Yeah, I'm tempted to go with Blackout for my prediction, but I do think people are going to look and see, oh, here's the place I get to vote for Dead Cells, and people that do what we do for a living love Dead Cells.
Yep.
Are we going through all of them, or are we breaking? I'm in. I'm not stopping you. I'm just saying, you got enough for another Gamescast, I feel like.
Do we?
Don't you think? We're halfway through now.
I mean, but a lot of this stuff is like...
Okay. I was just putting it out there. I was giving you an out if you wanted.
You know what? You're right.
Yeah, I have a theater to go to. Anyway.
Yeah, he's got things. It's 5:20 at night.
Yeah, yeah. Because now we also have our predictions for like announcements and stuff that I feel like
a little bit more time for us to
see what starts shaking in the bushes. You know what I mean?
I understood.
Shake the bush.
Sure. Shaking in the bushes. I know.
Rumors. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Like WikiLeaks and like stuff like that. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been the Kind of Funny Games Cast. We will return next week with more of our predictions, including our predictions of game announcements and the return of mobile game or bullshit. You want to tease the people of what next week's category will be?
Do your research on development studios, because next week it's mobile game or dev studio.
Wow. That's right. Until then.